Hi, this is the ghost of Ernest Borgnine. You might know me from such TV shows as McHale's Navy and a whole bunch of movies and stuff. I'm here to say, hey, do you like Film Sack? Oh, you do you then? Well, then might I recommend you help us out? Do it on a monthly basis and do it on the cheap. Look at all the money you're already spending on things like Hulu and Netflix and, I don't know, Amazon Prime. And we ask really hardly for anything. All we ask is that you go to patreon.com/frogpants and throw a little bit of money our way. Not a lot, just a little. So take it from me, the ghost of Ernest Borgnine. There's nothing more important than this right now, today. All right? Okay. Now on with the feature film thing.
Oh, how you doing? Is this the illegal chop shop? One of them illegal places where they chop up cars? Because I got a Buick guy here belonging to my wife. I want to get the shit chopped up because the bitch ain't been acting right. You know what I mean? Can you come out and take a look at it for me, please?
Man, give me $50. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 223, Mining the Very Depths of Film Entertainment for All Mankind. I was hoping that would rhyme, but it didn't. Hey, we're back. It's the show, and I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me this afternoon, Brian, he's going to Wonderworld Dunaway.
Nothing rhymes with three. Hey, guys, you know, at first I was like, this movie is going to suck. And then I was like, ethnically diverse chop shop diva singing classic Motown. I'm in. Excuse me, I got to go take a nervous piss.
All right. Also with us, Randy. Look, it's Okie Dokie Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Did I ever tell you about the time I got a job in a chop shop?
No.
So that's a secure warehouse where people would bring cars that they'd want us to disassemble for whatever reasons. It's
no,
a totally legit business. And you know how I know that? Because all we ever did was sing and dance. 24/7, we're all, yeah, can you see me dancing? Can you see my, play it out in your imagination, okay? Play it out in your imagination.
Too late, I already did. With us
it was
finally,
beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Thank you.
Finally
beautiful.
With us, Brian, where's Runny Cox Ibbett?
Did you say Runny Cox?
I said right. Runny Cox.
Hi there, thanks for calling Mike's Counterfeit Supply Store. This is Mike, how can I help you? Yes, we have our rag paper, which is $35 per sheet, and it will successfully make 24 bills per sheet. You're doing $1 bills? Okay. Well, you might also be interested in the 1.0 version of our Money Matrix 1000 software. It's easily hackable and even comes with a webcam so random people can put their face on the money.
Nice.
How did he get it on there? He didn't have a thumb drive. This is 1994.
Yeah.
He didn't have a thumb drive to put his face on there.
None of that. Look, for a movie that it didn't even rely that much on computer systems, it's still all anything that had technology connected to it, like how does this roller coaster work or what is the inner workings of whatever?
Magic.
So dumb. Right. It was like...
It was magic.
They're like gears from a watch or something. And
that's
everything.
That's, you should already be blowing the trope alert because computers are magic. Computers are magic in this movie.
You know what I had?
Can be operated from a small booth inside the alien attack Cylon business.
Cylon Vader looking.
What was wrong with those Cylons? They weren't quite up to snuff.
No. It was like, if we change them 10%, then we don't have to call them Cylons.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we all knew those were Cylons.
This is I am a tired aging director problem. Because
too old for this shit,
right? You're talking about an important director here, at least I think so. John Landis is a big deal. He's made a lot of really important movies. But he's like a lot of those guys from that era. They start to get really long in the tooth. And I would actually kind of argue that Spielberg's inching there himself lately. And I know Brian Dunaway would agree with this. But
yeah, you know what? I'm actually going to give Spielberg a pass this time.
All right. Well, Landis in this one just... It took none of the energy or the scope or the power of the way it was shot when Tony Scott did it, the previous film. Mm-hmm. None of that moved forward. So what you ended up with is like technique that he was good at when he made Trading Places or American Werewolf in London or something. It didn't work here, like, at all. Right. It just felt bland. And
this is supposed to be an action comedy, and the action is shot so clunky that you never feel like you're able to see it.
Yeah.
You're trying to imagine what's going on.
Yeah.
And then the comedy, I mean, it was like Eddie Murphy generic movie number 7.
Totally.
Right.
And those are the only parts that you could even kind of say were a little bit funny, because Eddie would maybe do his thing and make his laugh and you'd kind of go, oh yeah, I used to really think that was funny. Now it's just kind of okay. But that was it. All the other stuff that was supposed to be comedic totally fell flat. And my point is, when somebody like Landis is in charge, supposedly this director with all this, you know, history and quality and whatever, he's like, all right, well, let's make them kind of look like Cylons, but not really. They'll sort of look like Darth Vader too at the same time. And the eyes won't go back and forth. They'll kind of go cross-eyed. But they'll shoot this gun that will create a lifelike phaser beam that doesn't exist in real life. Like, there's no way the people standing there watching that were seeing that happen.
Right.
Like, it's just lazy to me. Or not. It's almost not lazy. It's almost like too much work for what you're trying to do. It should have just been blinking lights, because it didn't need to look like Han Solo fired that from a blaster, because I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to see that and go, bullshit.
And that was that. What ride is that really? Because that's a real ride.
It's,
right?
They didn't Earthquake, the Experience at Universal Studios.
Right.
Oh,
right.
I've never been on that. I didn't know that.
They slightly modified that with the Cylons. There's no Cylons.
No, but they have Cylons at other parts of, or at least they used to it at Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, let's just put them in here, and they'll walk around a little bit, but then when you shoot them, they'll be full of machinery. Yeah.
And they were just one lawsuit away from being Cylons. Like, they weren't quite there.
Right.
It's just that when this movie was made, it was the dead center between the old Cylons and the new Cylons.
Yeah.
And nobody really cared anymore about that copyright. Yeah.
No, everybody. Oh, by the way, Glenn Larson passed away last week. Just
super
to mention
sad.
That. Yeah, sad. Creator of BSG and many other fantastic pieces of work.
The original BSG.
Yeah.
And the Lauren Green business.
Yeah, and he consulted on the new one, I guess. He was always in the credits as like something producer thing.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know how much they really gave him to do, but, you know, probably sat around
showed
going,
up and said, good job, I'm going home.
Back in my day, Colonel Ty was black and had an afro.
What is this?
So does anybody besides me feel like this was really more a way for John Landis to get some of his director buddies some screen time?
Yeah, dude.
And less something that, you know, he's actually thinking, oh, this is going to be a really good way to carry on the franchise.
Well, I assume that the old guys in the bar were all directors, right? They must have been.
One of them was Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, wow.
And
Lucas
the other,
was out there.
Yeah,
Lucas in line, which a skinny George Lucas, right?
Yeah, very different looking George Lucas. Hadn't all been all grayed out or anything yet. I didn't know what I expected there. I mean, I knew about the cameo coming up. I didn't remember it from the first viewing in 94 when I saw this movie, but he showed up and I just went,
We didn't really know what directors looked like as much back then.
No. And all those old guys in the bar.
IMDb has really changed that a lot.
And the guys in the bar were from an era that we don't really know. And I mean, Harryhausen, as much of a legend as he is in all of our minds, you don't see him by sight and go, oh, there's Ray Harryhausen. Right. He just looks like somebody's grandpa.
You wouldn't now, because he did.
They should have stopped motioning.
Some of the other
him.
People who appeared in this, Robert B. Sherman, Arthur Hiller, John Singleton, Joe Dante, and Ray Harryhausen, as well as
dude,
George
weird.
Lucas.
Singleton was the firefighter, I'll bet. And I'll bet he was all of 24, because he would have been, because Boys in the Hood was what, the year before this or something?
Right.
Hmm. Something like that. Anyway, Singleton was young.
Yeah, I know the two guys. So Robert B. Sherman, I don't know who that is, actually. Sits
Mr.
next to
Sherman.
Arthur Hiller.
Did you say Sherman? Hold on.
That's what
Harry
she
Hilsen.
Said.
Sorry, a little Sherman there for you.
The guy who drops off his Porsche is Barbet Schroeder.
Oh, you mean the classic, I hand my keys to the black guy because he's a valet?
Because he's standing right there.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's a French-Swiss film director.
Okay. He had a cute girlfriend with him.
And I don't see where John Singleton was.
I'll bet he was that firefighter. It looked familiar to me.
I think he was in the Cylon suit.
Oh, Bobby Sherman. So Robert Sherman is Bobby Sherman, who wrote the music for Mary Poppins and Jungle Book and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
He's the hair guy with all the
he's
hair.
He's actually the guy who wrote the It's a Small World After All song.
That's right. That's right, because they did. They also wrote this song that's in this movie.
The Wonderworld song that kept
playing? Yeah, the Wonderworld song, yeah.
That Enrique...
It's a Wonderworld for you, it's a Wonderworld for me, or something
that
like
that. That Hector Esposito, whatever his name is, at the end, told it to shut that effing song up or whatever.
I'd just like to point out all that stuff, all of the extra directors and the cameos and the stuff that does not contribute one iota to the quality of the film.
But also, like, it doesn't take away from it.
No, I disagree. I think it completely takes away from it.
It definitely gives you something to gawk at. Like, what is George Lucas doing there at Wonderworld? But I mean, there's never a moment when you giggle at all.
No,
even a little bit.
I laughed more at the George Lucas bit than just about the entire
But that's
movie.
Three layers of irony deep that you're laughing
right,
at there.
Right.
Like, it's not so much True. That, oh, hey, I recognize George yeah. Lucas. It wasn't like that. It was like, oh, wow, he's really grumpy. That guy, he really played a grumpy guy in this
I'd
movie.
Rather have watched that than the 5 minutes of green screen time with Eddie Murphy jumping from...
Oh, yeah.
Wait, Scott Fletcher...
Cut away to the model, which has the basket swinging like they're going to freaking fly off that thing.
Exactly.
Perfect example of what I'm talking about in the action shots. They had a stunt guy doing great stunts.
Sure.
Why didn't they just stand on the ground and film?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just show me that.
Yeah. I think they thought they had fancy green screen. I think they thought they had something better because it had this quality of not quite terrible, but not quite as good as we do it now. And I'll bet you anything they were like, oh, we can totally do that. That looks great. That's new and improved and we'll just use it. And I think I walked away from that scene going, that wasn't the worst green screen I've seen, but the best.
The way it was edited was so obvious that you're cutting back and forth between a stuntman who's always facing away.
Yeah.
Right. And like Eddie Candyman. Murphy, who's always facing center.
Yeah.
You know?
He had Candyman features. It was weird.
It was sad. Like, oh, this could have been so great.
Yeah, I agree with that. But so somebody in the back of the room is waving their hand, and it turns out it's Scott Fletcher over there. He's saying, hey, Wayne, what about my intro? And so I'm going to let him do it.
Shut up, Scott Fletcher,
here you go, buddy. Here's your intro.
Beverly Hills Cop 3. Pursuing his boss's killers, Detroit cop Axel Foley reteams with Los Angeles detective Billy Rosewood when the trail leads to a Southern California theme park that's a front for a counterfeiting ring run by the gang who shot Foley's police chief.
It's as dumbly handled as that perhaps sounded. That description is pretty good because it's not very good. Like the guy who was saying he's basically your cash and checks, your body can't cash character. From the first movie, and he showed up in the second one, is here again and dies in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Which
is,
you know,
undignified and ridiculous.
And it shows a greater problem that this movie suffered from, which was a bad script and a bad story, because we instantly had to jump into something. What's going to motivate Axel Foley to go and do his thing? And so
specifically said he's not going to, and he's been told not to, like the previous two movies clearly have kicked him out of Beverly Hills for the rest of his life.
Right. And so they kill off him. And I was like, this is such a weak way for him to, matter of fact, he kind of just drops that whole facade about halfway through. He's no longer hunting for the person who killed his boss. He's just hunting for a cop killer.
Yeah.
I mean, it just kind of relegates down to that.
Well, here's a
trope. That's a trope, by the way.
Yes,
the sequel that starts with a death.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and not only that, but they do this. It's a sequel death, so it's a character you kind of recognize before. He wasn't a huge part, but he was enough of one that it's a you think the audience is going to have a cow about this.
A lot of times, it's a character that they wanted for the sequel and couldn't get.
Mm.
So, like in Rocky VI, right? It starts with. With Rocky going to the grave of his wife.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
She wouldn't come back.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't see Rocky VI. Go ahead.
You should.
Spoiler.
Yeah, you should see it.
I wish we could watch that for film sack. Yeah. I would like that.
It's worth seeing. Wait, that's the one with...
Is that the one that's just called Rocky?
That's after
called Rocky
Tommy
Balboa.
Gunn, right?
Oh, Rocky
Balboa.
Rocky Balboa, that's
right.
The
first one's called Rocky Duh.
And it's too bad that she didn't...
Rocky Duh. I don't
want to come...
Rocky Duh.
It's too bad she didn't want to come back.
Rocky,
that was the one that was the Russian one where he fought.
The one where
Rocky
the one where it's just Rocky Balboa is actually the best movie maybe of the bunch.
Series,
yeah,
in my opinion, right?
And it's too bad that anybody wouldn't want to come back for that. Well, I guess hold on, Adrian died though earlier in the movies though, right? Didn't she die like
two or three or something?
Yeah, I thought she died in three. She had cancer or something.
No, she's definitely in four.
She made all the way to...
We watched five for FilmSack, right?
Yeah, she was in Tommy Gunn because they were all about ready to get a divorce and stuff. Yeah.
I'm telling you, this the movie killed her because she
couldn't or
wouldn't be in the movie. And it's just stupid trope. I hate it when a movie opens with somebody somebody dying who was in the previous movie.
I'll bet you hate Alien 3 with a fire, yeah, with a thousand
suns.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about right there.
Because there's six characters who do that.
Right. I bet you hate Austin Powers 2, where she turns out to be a fembot.
I thought that didn't we learn that in the first one? I thought that
No, that was the second one. They started off with her being, she turned out to be a fembot.
Oh, all right.
So the love interest in the first whole movie was obliterated.
A real cliffhanger there.
What's her name? British actress?
British lady.
Elizabeth Hurley?
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Hurley. I wanted to say vomit, but it's Hurley. You got it right.
Really?
I did. No, I think she's lovely. I just always think of vomit when you say Hurley, because it sounds like hurl, like hurlet, you know?
Man, Lost must have been painful.
Maybe yes, if he'd Hurley a little bit more, he wouldn't be so large.
I forgot about Hurley. anyway, so it's a movie with a bunch of people in it, and a bunch of people wrote it. Eddie Murphy, John Tierney, Joey Travolta, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John Travolta's brother, for whatever reason.
Does that not sound like a biggest joke?
I'm a naive guy. What's his name, Joey? I didn't know he existed. I didn't know there was a working actor brother. He doesn't do much.
Until this week?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Oh, really?
I had no idea. No. I mean, I always hear about these guys, like Sylvester Stallone's brother plays drums for somebody or whatever. Right. Or
Clint Howard,
sure. Any of these. You hear about these guys, Peter Gunn's brother, James Gunn's brother, Peter, whatever it is. We've been watching that Gilmore Girls show, and his brother, the guy who did the body double for Rocket Raccoon in that movie, and he was one of Merle's backup dudes. Is in that show on the regular. His name's Kirk, and he's in it all the time. So there's another example. Oh, okay, famous director's brother, you know, dude in the movie. In this particular case, I'd never even heard of this, and as soon as I saw his face, I went, that's got to be Joey Travolta, and he's in the thing for like 5 minutes, yet really? IMDb is giving him third credit.
Yeah, the IMDb listing for this movie is really, it's really like an order of appearance, I think. It's got to be, because... you've got all the people in the chop shop listed first, the cops and the, you know, the walrus mustachioed Asian guy that we keep seeing in all of our movies.
You're right. Yeah.
It says first build only.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. First build only.
What's his name? Who's the Chinese guy again? Because he is in a lot of film
sack
movies.
He's in so many things that we've seen, and I'm scrolling through the list here to find him.
And this is how these people were listed in the credits.
Al Young, that's it.
That's it.
That guy's great. Every time he shows up, I'm like, ding. If I drank, I'd take a shot. Because guy's great.
We got to go around the table, though, and name our favorite unknown brother or sibling or whatever.
Who's
only famous because his or her sibling was really famous.
I mean, the Baldwins are an easy target. Yeah, but I feel like that one just shook out to be whoever
was
the better actor.
But a lot of them did okay. You know, like Bridges, he and Jeff are kind of equals. Yeah. But I'm talking about that unknown guy.
Unknown? I wouldn't know them. That's a really
that
hard.
Somebody that I think actually deserves some credit is Casey Affleck.
Oh, yeah. Casey's great.
Interesting. He's really good. I just saw him in a recent movie. I don't want to say what it is in case that's considered a spoiler.
Oh, but,
yeah, it is.
But it was the same movie that another person was in that was considered a spoiler.
It's dumb that those should be spoilers. They're just in the movie. But we won't say in case somebody's sensitive to it. But yeah, Casey Affleck is awesome. Go see that Robert Ford Killed Me movie.
I even think he's kind of fun in those Ocean's 11 movies too.
Yeah, he's
like,
great.
Like, for example, do you feel like Jim Belushi would have been a thing if his brother hadn't died?
Jim's a good example right there.
Because if you come down on the side of, he's actually pretty good and he's like a replacement brother, then my answer to this question is,
good thing we had two.
Why can't I have Kevin Farley be...
no kidding.
I the forgot perfect about Kevin replacement. Farley,
I would give you Brian Doyle Murray before I gave you Jim Belushi.
Yep, I'll do that.
Because I feel like Brian Doyle Murray is one of those guys that...
He's carved out his own space.
He kind of has, and he does... He originally did seem to only appear in Bill Murray movies.
That's true, but that other...
Start with Second City. I think Jim Belushi did. I think...
Yeah, he had the same
training. Had there not been a John Belushi, we probably still would have seen Jim Belushi... come out of that.
According to Jim, was inevitable. It was fate. And according to Jim, was going to happen whether we wanted it to or not.
I'm promising you, Kevin Farley is changing somebody's oil right now in upstate New York.
Kevin Farley.
I didn't even know he existed.
Oh, really?
Yes, he is. I didn't even know that.
And there's kind of my point, actually.
Oh, my God. Look at him. He looks like...
He looks and sounds exactly like his brother.
Right.
And it's one of those things where you're like, can't we just have him carry on the roles?
He's been in a lot of movies. He's been in quite a few movies.
He's that's weird. He looks like mature Chris Farley.
Of course he is. Yeah.
Right. You know?
It's almost like what Chris Farley would look like.
Yeah,
today. Is he a younger brother?
Let's see. He's 49 now. I think he's old. He'd have been older by a little bit. But that's Jim Belushi like in a lot of ways, because in a lot of ways I think Jim Belushi was the mature of the two. The one that looked more mature. He was also the one that didn't quite have the crazy lifestyle and the drugs and all the stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways Kevin Peter Farley and
Kevin's a year younger than Chris.
Oh, he is? Really?
Yeah.
Chris Farley would have been 50 this year? Jeez.
Wow.
Think of that. Crazy. Think of that.
And that's the problem, by the way, when the brother dies.
Yeah.
When the brother dies, he's forever young John Belushi, and you don't realize what a wreck he would have been in 2014.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, freaking Nirvana man. Kurt Cobain, what's he look like today?
Nirvana man.
You know?
Nirvana
Instead,
man.
We have him as permanently, you know, young, cool hair.
Forever young.
Guy. Man. It's you get immortalized that way. I think that's a weird deal.
Peter Aykroyd.
Oh, Peter Aykroyd is a great pick. These are all. It's funny because these are a lot of these are SNL / Second City people, aren't they?
Yeah. He was even in Nothing But Trouble and Dragnet.
Wow,
two movies we've seen, and I don't know why it didn't come up. That
weird. That's weird.
I'm looking at a picture of him. He's definitely the.
Hey, how come? Why do I have a very distinct memory that Taggart was in this, and he is not in this.
He is not.
Well, he was in a picture. Maybe that's what you're thinking of.
No, I swear to you, there was dialogue. It's not me confusing the scene in the pool from the second movie. I remember that.
And the reason why is because the character they replaced him with is pretty much the same character.
He is.
I mean, that's the reason why.
I love that guy. Well, that's not the reason why. That's just the fix for it. It's not like they said, "Hey, we've got Hector here. We need to. You're out of here, Taggart." I don't think that's how it went.
It was enough to fool your brain.
Yeah, but I think it was. He's fine. I like that guy a lot. By the way, he's great. Oh, yeah. He's great in everything.
Yeah.
He's old.
You Hector Elizondo, or the guy who plays
Hector.
Hector Elizondo guy, and he was great. He's so there's a sitcom I don't really care for. It's the new Tim Taylor thing.
Last Man Standing. That's it.
He's in that. He owns and runs this sporting goods store, and he's a freaking riot. He's really funny in it, and probably 80 or I don't know what he is now. He's like 1,000. He was born in like 36 or 38 or something. Still kicking it. That guy's got energy to spare. He's awesome. I was happy to have him in here. I just remember him being in it. I remember him being in it. I just thought Taggart was also in it, even if it was for like a shorter period of time, or it's what drove him to retire to Arizona or something. I don't know why I have that in my head.
Well, the truth was that they piddled around so long until he had other obligations and he couldn't make the movie.
Oh, is that what other
the real reason?
What other obligations did that guy have?
That's what I was wondering. I was trying to think of it. I was trying to look along the same years, and I'm like, oh, he's made up a reason. He's like, yeah, I got work to do. I can't hang around. I got to go by.
Well, the initial plot. So check this out. Before all this melted into what it became, the plot for this film would have been this. It would have concerned Foley, Rosewood, and Taggart, John Ashton, who would have been back, going to London, because this is what
London,
you do in your
baby.
Third movie. This is what you do. You go international, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go to London to rescue.
Or they have a baby, but yeah.
Three men and a baby in London.
That would have been great. I would have watched that.
They go there to rescue Captain Bagomal, whatever, Ronnie Cox, his character.
Bagomal.
who's been, wait, that's like the evil Smurf.
Smurf catcher, dude.
Anyway, being held hostage by terrorists during an international police convention. However, this is real dumb. However, numerous problems such as scripting issues and the budget caused pre-production to drag to the point that both John Ashton and Ronnie Cox had to drop out due to, it's what we've always called him. I'm just using the nomenclature of films.
I'm just going to say it over and over.
Because they had other projects. So assuming they all had too much to do, I'm not sure that plot would have been any worse than what we got, because this Wonder World thing is dumb. Super, super dumb. First of all, you don't need to go DC and name something Gotham. Just call it Disneyland. Like, was that a problem? Did it cost you too much?
Yeah, it definitely would have been a problem.
Why?
Yeah,
why?
Corrupt individuals working in the park.
Exactly.
That wouldn't
but I would go, I would venture to guess. This is a complete guess, but I swear I've seen movies where Disneyland is represented, and there are dubious things happening there.
The only one that I can think of is the recent one, Escape from Tomorrowland, which
and that was Guerrilla.
filming, yes, right? Exactly. That was guerrilla filmed. But it is funny that Disney either didn't or couldn't do anything about that one. But no, for them to do this, you know, full scale, big budget movie that showed that basically put Disneyland in a very negative light.
Yeah.
Such as stupid rides that
shoot.
Right. Rides that could be destroyed simply by flipping a couple of overly sized levers.
Did you know that when you mess with control panels for rides, they explode?
They ruin everything.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. The gears start eating themselves. It's
then
the worst.
Spinning around like they're crazy.
Yep. And then you got Candyman, a.k.a. stunt double for Eddie Murphy, jumping between cars, trying to save kids. So dumb.
Was totally Candyman.
So Judge Reinhold, who... he didn't have anything going on, clearly, because he's all up in this. I like Judge Reinhold.
Charming. I wanted more of him in this movie.
I agree. It wasn't enough.
Such an afterthought.
It wasn't enough. They did a couple of moments, like when he was in the car calling the shots on his headset and trying to be all SWAT man. There were some really funny moments there. I'm like, all right, now that's the Axel Foley Judge Reinhold relationship, where he loves him, clearly he's an important guy in his life, but he's gonna make fun of what a turd, you know, what a dingus he is and how naive he is and all those things. Which brings me to my other thing, and I want to get this out before I forget about it.
Get it out.
This is the problem with this whole series of movies. The first two were great. Second one I think is awesome. All right. First one's okay. But the third one's just terrible and it just takes such a weird step backwards, and I don't know why. It's very Crystal Skull as far as series go.
Yeah.
But one of the core things you're supposed to accept about this has never sat well with me, even when I first saw the first movie back in the 80s. And that is this, that somehow if you live in Detroit.
Detroit.
It's like RoboCop in here or something.
San Francisco, Tokyo.
Oh, dude.
If you're living in Detroit, that movie's so good.
That's right. Yeah.
That movie's so good.
Anyway, Detroit.
Anyway, if you're living in Detroit, you're a rough and tumble street cop, blah, blah, blah. Fine. Mm-hmm. But somehow LA is like going to another planet.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And now I know we are way more global of a community now, and somebody hopping an hour and a half flight to LA is not a big deal. Like maybe even it wasn't. Let's say in the 80s, it was still a big deal and there was a bigger contrast. But I guarantee it's never been that big of a deal where you'd show up and act like you're in space land.
My favorite thing is when he first goes to the Beverly Hills Police Department and they shot it at like the Four Seasons in Santa Monica Beach or something.
Right.
They went in there and cleared it all out, and they make it seem like it's the most palatial thing ever.
It's dumb.
That made me happy. That was funny.
The drive up speaker thing that's straight out of Demolition Man.
That was funny.
See, that's
Scott.
The gag. Yeah. That's the gag, Scott.
I know, but it's a bad gag. It's a gag based on a complete falsehood. Nobody in Detroit. Absolutely. Detroit is a big American city. And yeah, it's on hard times now. But back then, it kind of hadn't gone that way quite yet, even in 94. Right. And it's the idea that you couldn't leave Detroit and somehow not fit in. That LA is nothing but white people who don't understand the black cop from Detroit is a silly premise.
Well, and there's a lot of things they were trying to say. You could kind of feel they're trying to say some stuff, but you know they weren't saying anything really. Mm. But they were kind of... they're kind of implying that blue collar crime is, you know, it's a bunch of good old guys, you know, they're not going to actually hurt anybody. They don't have any guns, but these guys from, you know, from Southern California and their white collar crime, they're going to come in and they don't care. That's going to kill everybody. And
it just ignores the truth, which is LA is full of all sorts of crime, like all the worst kinds. It's gang crime, it's murders, it's deaths, it's guns, it's drugs, it's all that stuff. Yeah. It's the
especially
same
given
as
this
Detroit.
Was made after Rodney King, right?
Right. 92 to 94 would have been that era. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the gag, I guess. I mean, it's
a terrible gag.
It's a horrible gag. Really, you're right. Is. I mean, we how many stupid Beverly Hills movies have we had over the years between Cop, you know, and Chihuahuas. Yeah.
Slums
and,
of Beverly Hills.
Yeah, slums. Right. Down and Out. Clueless. Beverly. Oh, that was a good one. Yeah. That was a good one.
What was the Born in East LA? Was that the Cheech? No, Chong, just Cheech in that one, right?
Born in East LA?
Yeah. Wasn't that a Cheech movie?
Yeah. But was that wasn't... Beverly Hills, though, that was like
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Compton and stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm just lumping the whole state into one big wall.
but this whole Beverly Hills Chihuahua thing is for real. I mean, this is a trope in and of itself. Your movie is lampooning.
That's a my scrope trope.
Your movie is lampooning the is lampooning Bel Air. How Fresh Prince of Bel Air is a lampoon.
Oh, that's a good
one. That's a really good one. Yeah. Pull him out of Philadelphia where everything is hell and put him in Bel Air where everything's perfect.
Right.
I get it. I understand.
Go home. Smell you later.
So Judge Reinhold, Eddie Murphy, and Gilbert R. Hill, he's the dying police chief in the first 5 minutes. They are the only three people to make it from all three films. So they, that does not include Bronson Pinchot, who was only in the first and third.
He skipped the second one.
And I didn't realize this. So here's a little piece of just my own trivia because I just started digging around. Sometimes I get timelines so mixed up in my head. And I'm sure something came before something else. My opinion would have been, oh yeah, Bronson Pinchot would have been in these movies after his big Perfect Strangers notoriety.
Right.
Nope. All this stuff is long before Perfect Strangers.
What?
Yeah,
really?
'96 for Perfect Strangers, isn't it?
No, that's still, I want to say it's late 80s.
That was in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop 1 came out long before
for the
Perfect
first
Strangers.
One, yeah.
The second one, I didn't actually look that up, but. It's weird to me because I thought that was the place we all would have gotten him from, and then he would show up in movies from there. And most of the movies we know him from are the ones that he would be famous for or that are movies people, you know, still think of fondly are from before his Perfect Strangers time, which totally surprised me. I would have thought, oh, Perfect Strangers, the perfect launching point for Bronson Pinchot into things. Huh. He's still kicking it. He's still working and doing, TV and movies.
He still looks
and,
the same age, too.
Yeah, he hasn't aged a bit.
He looks like in his IMDb photo, looks like a scared Data.
Yeah.
Scared.
Like
good
a
call.
Frightened, an easily frightened Brent Spiner.
So if we had a Star Trek Next Generation reboot, we could kind of do a...
Because you got Data, Lore, you got B4, and you got Pinchot. Yeah. That's a pretty good name for a robot. Why not?
So do you see the third movie listed on his IMDb
filmography
that's coming on 23?
Oh, no. Wait. Who? Pinchot?
Brunson Pinchot. Yeah.
Oh, well, hold on.
Wasn't he going to be James Bond? No, that's the other guy.
He's in post-production for something called The Strike. Then he was in an episode of NCIS this year.
Yeah.
Well, is he listed for Beverly Hills Cop 4, which is now in pre-production?
What?
Yeah, they're making a new one.
There wasn't already a Beverly Hills Cop 4?
Nope.
No, but his third movie is called, I'm not going to say it, Kung Fu and
You. Kung Fu and You, right?
And then,
Kung Fu F-U. Is that what it is?
And a T word for a woman's chest.
Oh,
right.
Really?
Right. Yeah. I noticed that.
That's weird.
What is a T word for
that's really weird.
Chest? Where he plays a character named the Beaver.
Wow, that's great. That sounds like a big step up for Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah. Hey,
when are we going to watch this one for
the horizontal move?
So
Beverly Hills Cop 4 announced pre-production 2016 is the date, and so far cast-wise they have Eddie Murphy, Ronnie Cox, Teresa Randall, who's back as Janice Perkins from this movie. No. She's the security lady. John Ashton.
Oh, really?
let's see, Brandon Jerome Jones and Gary Anthony Sturgis. So there's been casting. Like this is most of these are rumored, but
so they're gonna like say that he's still dating the woman from the amusement park.
I'm glad because I was kind
they
of
ended
like,
up together. Maybe I don't know.
I was kind of like really another young lady he's gonna date during this, and they didn't really do anything. You know,
I like the idea that they ended up together. Glad. That's fine. And if you want to have some continuity, everyone retcons like Superman. What's the Richard Pryor one? 3, I guess. Mm-hmm. No one like that and the fourth one. People just don't even consider them part of the timeline, right? It's like these are so bad.
Right.
Let's just redo it.
Not canon. Not Beverly Hills canon.
Now here's the best part of that. Here's the best part of that thinking because this same thing has applied anyway to Last Stand, X-Men Last Stand. Where they say this new X-Men movie has gone back and retconned the hell out of that because everyone hated it. Right. That was directed by Brett Ratner. I would just like to point your attention to the just announced Beverly Hills Cop 4 director, one Brett Ratner. So that'll be great.
I am down with that.
I'm not. I hate Ratner's movies. Yes.
This movie bugged me, by the way, with that ending. And I realize, it's a trope.
Hold on, is it?
The trope is, since everything worked out, we're going to end the movie with an award ceremony for the lead character.
Oh, you mean the second ending?
Right. And it bugs me. I suddenly realized how many movies I've seen that ended with an award ceremony when they had already done just fine. They had an ending. It was all wrapped up. I didn't need that extra minute of the...
You'll take it in Star Wars, though, right? Won't you take it there?
Well, and that's the problem. Because that's actually a pretty fun scene that, like, helps you get out of the movie. You leave happy and smiling.
Although, have you seen... There's a YouTube video of that scene with all music removed.
Oh, yeah.
It is amazing.
That is amazing. I agree.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like the music videos without music kind of thing. Just people awkwardly...
dancing in the streets with... that dancing in the streets one with Jagger and Bowie.
Yes.
Is a thing of genius. I mean,
the Jamiroquai one is my favorite.
I haven't seen that one.
Since we're talking about the ending, Randy, the ending brought a couple of things to my attention. First of all, I had to go read the Wikipedia because I wanted to see if there was any trivia related to the earlier incident where Eddie Murphy is talking on a Fox phone, a payphone, and it's a Fox, and it's the same Fox that he was later. Dedicated. They dedicated
a new
character. Yeah, that was the Axel Fox. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but he was talking on the Fox phone earlier because I thought, ha, Fox phone, that's funny. And I wrote it down. So I thought that was weird. So then I went to the Wikipedia and I realized for the first time how poorly written one of these articles is for anything on Wikipedia, because I think one of the first sentences in the description is like, meanwhile, the chop shop, the workers there are killed by a well-dressed man after they hijack a cart full of drugs.
A cart.
That did not happen at all.
First,
there was no cart anywhere.
No,
second of all, there wasn't drugs at all.
They specifically say this has nothing to do with drugs.
I think that's awesome. I love it when Wikipedia is wrong.
Oh, Wikipedia. Then that started making me think, oh, man, no one cares about this movie so hard on the internet that they're not even going to correct the Wikipedia. It's just going to go on being wrong forever.
Well, if IMDb is wrong about this, then I don't want to be right. Okay.
This is Wikipedia.
Because this is what they said right here. They said... One idea for the film came from Brandon Tartikoff. He was the head of NBC at the time, I think, anyway. Or he was in the 80s. He says, who suggested a crossover film with Paul Hogan as Crocodile Dundee?
Oh, my God.
But the idea was rejected by Eddie Murphy, who hopefully had the cool head to say no to such gibberish.
I think he said, hell no. I don't think he just said no. I think he just walked
hell away. No. I would have taken... I mean, in retrospect, though, as a FilmSack employee, I would totally... go for a movie that would have Paul
Hogan
and
Axel Foley. I didn't think you would watch
a
Crocodile Dundee. Was that
no? But if you combine them, if you put Eddie Murphy in a movie with Paul Hogan, I think I'm back in.
Back in,
because that's terrible. That's a really bad idea. That would have been a great film sack.
So
moment.
You want to see a scene where Paul Hogan is trying to make it to the train station to meet up with Eddie Murphy?
Yeah,
but getting stopped by all the people.
It's a terrible mashup. It's awful.
The whole movie just keeps cutting over to Crocodile Dundee, and he's not where the action is because he can't figure out how to work America.
He's always late.
That's about right. Perfect. Brian, I pulled one for you here.
Okay.
This is the only Beverly Hills Cop movie not to feature a song performed by the Pointer Sisters. Beverly Hills Cop 1984 had their song Neutron Dance, and Beverly Hills Cop 2 in 87 had their song Be There. This one had none of that. Instead, this had Faltermeyer-like music and that Wonderworld song.
It was Faltermeyer.
Yeah,
F-A-U-X, Faltermeyer. But it did have Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Oh, yeah, it did.
You gotta love.
It's been a while. I can't even remember what he did. What was his deal?
Big thing was Wishing Well and Sign Your Name Across My Heart.
That guy.
Have you seen him? He changed his name. He moved. He's got a whole new thing. I belong to his newsletter. It's really weird.
What? I'm kidding. What?
Yeah.
You belong to his newsletter?
He calls himself Sananda Maitreya now.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. Yeah, it better than
the internet showed me. So Terrence Trent D'Arby, I always liked it because D'Arby was D'Arby.
Yeah, right, it's like a Star Wars planet.
Yeah, yeah, or World of Warcraft.
Unnecessary use of Arby. Apostrophes.
Fetch me 12 monkey pelts and bring them back to D'Arby. whatever. That guy, long live Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Incredible voice, and I guess didn't have the right vehicle for it.
No, did not. Bronson Pinchot did Beverly Hills. Oh, I already did that one. I already talked about how old that was. All right, I got one of these here. Here's this. I feel like hard-boiled cops are always from Detroit. I feel like that's just what you, that's where you go. That's your go. It's either Phil, it's Philly, it's Detroit, or it's New York, and they're all coming to the West Coast. I mean, even Die Hard had this problem. Die Hard was the same kind of thing. Ugh, no, rough and dirty streets in New York. Here I am in LA where I just can't fit in.
Yeah, look at all the palm trees and the sunny skies, and Ralph Macchio is going to learn karate.
Dumb.
If you want a, you know, a hardworking teamster, it has to be from Detroit. I mean, so everything from Detroit is always tough. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Or RoboCop.
That's the whole idea.
He's from there. Yeah. By the way, that new one's streaming. I want to see it.
The new RoboCop? Yeah, I've watched it. It's not.
Oh, it's on our list.
It's not horrible.
I heard it was all right.
No, you're not supposed to watch it, Dunaway. It's on our list.
Is well, I watched it before we even put it on the list.
Yeah, I watched it before it was put on the list.
Fuck off.
Keep it on there because I want to see it. I know we're doing two soon, which is exciting because that's, I think that's the one that, what's his name, wrote? Comic Book Man.
Kevin Smith?
No, Frank Miller, I think, wrote it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, may have directed too. I know he at least wrote it. I'm not sure about that. I'll have to look that up. I think that's right, though. That was, and I've never seen it, so I totally want to see RoboCop 2, which is coming up.
Never seen RoboCop 2?
No, never have.
That's interesting.
I saw 3. It was real bad. Really bad.
Yeah.
Third sequel is not great.
Two's not a prize either, but you know, what are you going to do?
It's a rare thing for a third sequel. Let's think of some good examples here. There's good, you could say Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi is okay. It's fine. It's the Muppet movie. When we were kids, it was our favorite. But now we look back and we go, okay, too many Muppets. What's with all the puppets in this? Then you got Indiana Jones. Last Crusade's a good movie. Great movie, right?
Which is where it actually ended.
Yes. Forget about the one after that.
But yeah, retcon that.
Yeah.
But most of the time. It was all just a dream. There's no Shia LaBeouf.
Most of the time, I feel like third time out is rough for people. I don't think it goes very well. And right now, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
It's according to. I mean, with this three, it was kind of it made sense because they were trying to do the every couple of years they were putting another one out and keeping the franchise hot, you know, and they wanted to finish it out. And really, they should have just not.
Well, no,
we've talked about this. Yeah. We talked about this. How the third film, you can't possibly have a good one like Star Trek III, Godfather III. So for some reason, you don't have anything left. No ammo.
Yeah, you got to wrap up. Yeah, you got to wrap up.
Yeah, but this was like, so like, you went from this big international spy ring, awesome story of the second one, which there are lots of out there Bruckheimer moments in it. I get that. But this movie is about a Disneyland ripoff, and it's just so low impact.
If they ever made a Beverly Hills Cop animated series, like a Saturday morning Beverly Hills Cop, this would have been the plot they went with for it.
Yeah,
totally.
Because he dresses up as a mascot.
Totally agree.
You know,
Brian nailed it in that
Scooby-Doo Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters.
They would have pulled
that
the mask off of the bad guy and, oh, I'm counterfeiting $1 bills.
And I would have made it too if it wasn't for you and your idiot Judge Reinhold or whatever.
You're idiot
Billy. Yeah.
but that's a really, I mean, that's what you've said is true. And it's in all of the currency that came into making it feels like that's the effort, because you go from Tony Scott to John Landis. Tony Scott, big boom, exploding. Wow. To John Landis, quiet comedy writer, boring. You go from a scene of like, you know, it's amazing, like set pieces and crazy. What was her name?
Bridget Nielsen.
Bridget Nielsen was like a freaking femme robot from hell, and all this kind of stuff. And in this,
Eddie Murphy hanging off the back of a car that's driving there, off the back of a truck that's being driven down.
And then this one, it's like, oh, a guy in a suit who wants a bunch of counterfeit money.
Right. you have guys in the chop shop who couldn't shoot. You know, who had stormtrooper disease and people sliding across the hood of a car and can't still slide far enough. So he has to kind of push himself along.
You saw that.
Can't shoot him.
Yeah, that was dumb. Yeah.
But the cops are pretty good. The cops were pretty good shots, though, in this movie.
They were all right.
I just want to say, though, as far as the one big villain in the movie goes, you know, we talked about this with Roadhouse. This was a great villain to hate. God, it's rare in a movie when you want to reach into the screen and just squish his whole face.
It's funny because I feel like I hated him. I hated him not because of anything they were showing me or how they developed his character. That guy's got a face.
Beady eyes. Yeah.
Just hate.
And he's got the look of the bad guy. So it's every time you're like, dang it.
Yeah, that guy. Ooh. Luck of the bad guy, stormtrooper disease. I like these terms we got for all this stuff. Right. This is good. I thought it was some pretty impressive security, though. You got all these like major security guys that got those things in their ear. They're huge buff dudes with giant guns in their shirts or in their jackets.
Guns in their pants.
And then
Scott?
Then they have this really impressive piece of security, which is a big cartoony door on a fake tree in the middle of Main Street Wonder World that you can just go in there with no lock or key. Just go down, hang out underneath, sabotage all the shit and come out. Perfect.
And if you happen to be wearing a costume, you're all over the place.
I'll talk about your shark jumping. Ugh.
Hey, why did we suddenly start hating mascots? Or was that a long before then? Because I noticed like during the late 80s and early 90s, it was almost mime level.
We do still hate them. No one likes them. Who likes them now? Name it. Who?
Everybody loves the chicken. Yep.
Kids like them and think people think they like the chicken. They don't. They hate the chicken. They don't want the chicken. And the only people that feel good playing the chicken or hear locally the jazz bear drives me apeshit every time I see it. That thing is, they hate that thing. It's always some young college freshman who's just stoked to be there. And then that's it. Nobody else wants to do that. Nobody wants to put that on. It sucks. They're the worst. Oh my gosh.
Not the worst. The
mascots are the worst. They're the worst.
We hate mascots.
Anyway.
I mean, like, I could go on forever. Like, a mascot. We hate it.
Some of these weren't really mascots. Again, because they were more like the characters from Disney World. So they weren't necessarily mascots as much as they're. All right, they're mascots.
They are mascots. Yeah. They just happen to be not ones we knew of. I mean, who cares about what was his name? Okie Dokie, because we just don't have him for real.
I actually liked Okie Dokie. He made me smile.
I like the scene with Okie Dokie and the kids, you know, especially the kid who laughs at his brother when his brother gets pushed into the fountain. Because that is some of the best horrible acting. That made me laugh for minutes afterwards. That kid's laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I wanted to capture that and repeat, like make a vine out of it, so it would just loop forever.
At the same time, this whole Uncle Bob, Walt Disney dude, Uncle Dave, the man behind the curtain sort of character.
I thought he was going to be bad. I couldn't remember.
I thought that had so much potential. You know, as much as I hate mascots, I like the idea of a dotard old guy who is just living out his years behind the curtain. Like, it could have been funny. And instead, what they do, they just shot him.
Yeah.
Sent him to the hospital.
Yeah, then he was fine. They didn't think he was going to make it, but boy, he sure did. He seemed to be just fine standing up there. You know, I really do. Again, the Taggart thing comes to mind, but I have a very strong memory that he turned out to be the one behind it all because the park was losing money and he had to figure out a way to make more money. And at some point, he pulled out a gun and Axel's like not you, Uncle Dave.
I like your character assassination a lot better.
And like the guy who shot him didn't really shoot him. It was just a gag.
I wasn't retired at all.
Because you know you've seen it 1,000 times and this always happens. In fact, there's your Scooby-Doo movie right there.
Yep.
But then it didn't happen. I went, I think I even put a note in my spreadsheet saying, I knew it was Uncle Dave the whole time before it happened and went, delete that. He didn't go bad.
I enjoyed the first ending where everybody was fatally wounded, but they all were laughing, so we knew it was going to be
improvising.
All right.
Yeah. They were good.
That made me happy.
Although, if
Judge Reynolds just fell over into the cloud, it's probably probably broke a tooth on that metal rail that the cars go on. Yeah, funny.
Although, when somebody's bleeding to death and they fall over, usually not an opportunity to laugh. You know, like that usually means he's going to die. You dumbasses.
Yeah.
But that was a better first ending. I agree with you on there.
Mm-hmm. Just the celebration of the character. It's like we wrote a character and we wrote that the character succeeded. And then we wrote that the character got an award for doing what we wrote the character would do. Like, no, stop.
And then he gets to go to the Tunnel of Love.
Oh, yeah, nice.
You just won a civic award. What are you going to do? I'm going to Disneyland. I mean, Wonder World.
Yeah, you're one potential strong female character. And you go ahead and just have her boil down to, well, clearly they've named a mascot after him. Now I need to take him to the Tunnel of Love because I'm the lady in the movie. Come on. So cheap.
I'm the lady.
And there was lots of weird little racial things.
My vagina's not a tunnel.
I have some clips that kind of support my feeling.
Technically,
that
it is.
They just got cheap with racism. And I don't know. It's just dumb. It's just a dumb movie. Now, all of that being said, I'm willing to admit in front of all of you and everyone listening that it is not nearly as bad as I originally thought it was going to be. I thought it was way worse than what I saw there. I thought it was a much worse movie. Because I saw it in the theater. I spent good money on it. I felt like, this is just, what are we even doing here?
Right.
Now, I was like, I mean, this is passable. It's not the worst thing we've seen on this show.
Well, I guess because you had, when you're going in to part three last time, you had zero expectations to maybe a little bit of elevated expectations, where now you were kind of like, probably had a little bit below elevated expectations.
Oh, yeah, I expected it to be terrible.
Right.
Like in every sense. And it is kind of bad. I mean, don't get me wrong. This isn't me giving it a pass.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's not there. We have seen worse sequels. We've seen worse ideas. Sure. You know, like the worst sequels ever made, I think, and we haven't seen them here. We've only seen the original, but the Highlander sequels are utter garbage. So until somebody does something quite that bad with the original material, then this one gets a small pass from me. It's all right.
Pass.
It's okay. Pass. I miss Eddie Murphy on the regular. I know that.
Yeah, it gave you this memory of what it was like to see Eddie Murphy films between 85 and 95.
Yeah.
And like I said, generic Eddie Murphy film number 7, he hits all the same moves that he does in every movie.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Like, it's almost surreal, but it's kind of good that way.
Have we seen any other movies besides Golden Child in this? I was trying to rack him in
other
my head.
Other Eddie Murphy movies?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
You know, Eddie Murphy was in Golden Child. That was a really good movie.
I like Golden Child.
I stand by that movie.
Sure, well, I still like...
it's got issues, but it's fine.
Golden Child.
Yeah.
Give me the knife.
No. Give me the knife. That goes.
We often look into watching Harlem Nights, but then it'll go off streaming on us.
As soon as we start talking about it, it goes away. Mm-hmm. I hate that.
Oh, you know what? I did laugh at this movie. The one Eddie Murphy moment that I felt like he stood up and was being an original Eddie Murphy, somewhat. Anyway, when he comes back and he's knocking on Judge Reinhold's door, and he's knocking and knocking and knocking, and Judge Reinhold's not answering the door, and he finally goes there. What is it? You know, and Eddie Murphy is like just got his face plastered against the glass. That makes me laugh.
Yeah, that was kind of
I don't
funny.
Know why that makes me laugh.
I captured a screen grab of of Billy too.
So we almost talked about it, but can I give you my favorite trope in the film?
Of course, here you go.
The Annihilator 2000.
That is the worst thing in the movie.
It's the gun that does everything.
Yep. Hate it. That I works in it. Fifth Element. It sucks everywhere else because you're not in space and it makes no sense. Like, again, this is like the lasers from the Cylon looking dudes or anything where it's like, oh, well, you know, people just buy the fact that this gun would exist. This doesn't exist. It's not at gun shows. It doesn't do all those dumb things it did.
Radio and microwave.
But that was the thing.
Felt like a RoboCop thing, right?
Right.
Like this would be, you know, another thing invented by the same company that did.
Detroit influence, man.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
It could be. Sure. I'll buy that. But it's out of context here. You know, it doesn't fit
it
here.
It was and it wasn't. If you look at 94, this is when we were still... You know, we had the cell phone today, and the cell phone does so many things, and it's an all-in-one device. And I think, you know, we were seeing a lot of silly off-the-wall all-in-one devices during that time period. And to put that into, you know, to the guns and stuff, I think it was probably a little, you know, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And I was okay with it because I felt like it was one of those things where if in 94, I probably would have said, that's silly.
Well, I want to point out to Scott, not only was that so funny that Fifth Element did it, they did it twice.
Yeah.
Fifth Element has two completely separate gags with ridiculous guns that don't work the way that the person using them expects them to.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, but
contextually, in context, totally great gag. Nothing wrong with it. In here, like Men in Black, yes, have a weird ass gun that's super tiny but blows giant holes through buildings.
Powerful, right?
Sure. All those things make sense. Yeah. Cricket, was that what it was called? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there, again,
the noisy cricket.
There's the context. In this thing, the context doesn't exist. It's supposed to be set in LA and, you know, it's supposed to be a gun show. And there's no Bronson Pinchot type dude.
Bronson Pinchot is so over the top and he's, you know. He made you an espresso with a lemon twist. If people had forgotten the first movie.
If you forgot who
I
was.
You remember the first movie when I made you a... That was really funny.
Yeah,
it's almost like it was Bronson Pinchot's resume. Like,
yeah. Make sure he mentions all the hot points of when he first appeared in this dumb series. But it's just so like... By the whole final third of the movie is really a problem. One thing after another is a problem. This movie sucks in the final third. First two thirds aren't great either, but this is where it all falls apart. And that gun playing music instead of shooting something.
Yeah.
What the hell gun is that?
And them, plays two, and them different, standing plays there two waiting. Different songs. Like,
right. It was. Yeah.
I can get behind a gun that plays one song.
Was one of them the, I was thinking of Dunaway.
Jerry Lewis. Was it a Jerry Lewis thing.
And then the other one was like a rapper, yeah. Or like a Public Enemy kind of thing or something. Mm. I swear I heard Humpty Hump in there, that guy.
I was amused with the fact that suddenly we're in a James Bond film for a moment, and I knew very well that if he showed him a device and put it in Axel Foley's hands, that was gonna get used. I like that.
All right. You make a good point. Considering all that we've considered, perhaps it wasn't the worst idea.
It was bad. But no, it's made worse by time. Time makes it even seem even worse.
Oh, time just about kills it.
Right.
All right. We're going to do some clips now. These are clips from the film, and they begin with this one.
Where in the hell is SWAT?
All right. Just a short little sweet. Where the hell is SWAT?
I was kind of glad for that. Like, it started out, and I'm like, what is going on in this movie?
Yeah.
And Eddie Murphy, once again, is playing this role all weird, and you're like, how could he be in charge of anything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Was.
I get it.
Yeah.
And see, good. That was the other thing that was supposed to make us feel like Eddie Murphy had something to vindicate, was the fact that he never called SWAT, and it was his fault that the captain got killed. But they never explored it.
Yeah, well, he thought they didn't need that much firepower or whatever, because it was just a simple, you know, hack and grab and go in there and get it. They didn't know that Suit Man was going to show up and
Suit Man
literally kill everybody. So here's why SWAT is good.
I wouldn't raid a church bingo game without SWAT.
All right. They really let him stretch as a character, and
it's the accent, the dialect. What is it? The
I don't know.
Word I'm looking for.
It's great. Yeah, but he's the one
Southern drawl.
Uh-huh.
The question mark at the end of that sentence, is that what it is?
I don't know.
It's pretty good. Also, I love a movie that is rated R and could swear if it wants, but says this instead.
What the?
Just what the?
What the?
Stuff right there.
I hate what this. I hate them. They're the most terrible overused thing that we ever had. Why are people still saying what
the? People don't say what the.
What the? I've never done that. I never walk into a room see like the dog torn open a bag of trash and go, what the? I don't do that. I would go, you piece of shit. Or, you know.
Yeah, you scream at the dog. You throw things and the dog dodges them all the time, every time.
It's terrible. Oh. All right, here's that theme. It came back a little bit.
Back a little bit. Are you kidding me? There was like variations on that throughout the whole movie.
But none of them were
like
Faltermeyer.
In the hospital, there was like an ER version of it. Like,
there was. I forgot about that. Yeah. Well, there's other.
There's every version of it. There's a smooth jazz version.
Love the cowboy version. When
there's a cowboy version of it.
Yeah. But then there's some other interstitial stuff that's real bad. Things like this. You know, I may as well be playing Double Dragon there.
I felt that.
Even better with the fake hit sounds. Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, seriously. Go. Digitize those voices a bit. It's Double Dragon.
It totally is.
Or Final Fight or something. Okay, here's it's a moment here where we got to get
which by the way goes perfectly with the whole thing with the automobile. When you shoot parts of the automobile in video games, they fall off.
Yeah, it totally was
like,
falling apart.
You shoot the windshield, it just falls right out. Yep. You shoot the hood, boom, goes right off. And then you shoot the car seat.
So dumb. All right.
And it falls out the side.
Now the movie wants to get real serious. Here's a serious moment.
Detective Foley. What's going on at my park?
You think there's something going on?
Oh, hey. I like that part, so I just took that out. It's Uncle Dave losing it. It's like, Dave, you okay? All right, great.
You think there's something going on?
All right,
that's great. The guy, by the way, that guy is the voice of Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he has kids named after the Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
He has kids named Huey, Dewey.
I was reading about
this. Uncle?
There's something.
I'm not your father.
He never inflected in a way that I got to hear it, though. I really wanted to hear that. I read that. Here's something that says terrible jokes. I don't know what this is.
If you have homeless people on your lawn, press 15.
Oh, yeah. That's a bad joke.
Yeah, it's rich people problems. First world problems.
Well, not only that, it's just dumb because it wouldn't exist.
Right.
There would be no drive-up police thing that talked to you anyway. Second of all, once you picked your menu choice, it wouldn't say things like, if you've got homeless people, oh my gosh, I just want to strangle that part of that movie.
Plus the technology. I think the first thing she is like, if you for Spanish, press one. For Farsi, press two. Well, if you press 1-5 for homeless people on your lawn, you're also pressing one.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid it was machine. Dumb. It was so dumb. I hate that. All right. Here's your more. I found a clip. This is an old clip of. This is important here. Hold on. Let me pull this up here. This is an old clip of what Brian Ibbett said one night when he got lost on prom. He couldn't find where to go, and the girl was getting irritated, and he answered thusly.
I have no doubts, nor do I have any ideas.
There you go. That's it. Good job, Brian.
Okay.
Here's. What's this one? Oh, Perfect Stranger.
No, why? I don't believe this. Aquel! Aquel, buddy! Aquel, buddy! You crazy thing! What you doing here?
No. Oh.
Aquel, fully.
Wow.
It's really painful, guys.
It's way worse not seeing him.
It is worse. It is way worse. All right, here's some more bad music. Yeah. Some fake horns in there and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
94 feels too late for that sound to me.
Not at all.
Yeah, well, they had to back it up. Yeah, they had to back it up.
It had to fit with the other movies. Like,
yeah, it fit with Axel Foley.
We're now making a seventh Star Wars movie that's going to sound like 1977.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. But you can get away with symphonic, you know? I mean, you can get away with it. But that is just not good. Mm-hmm.
That's the bonus round for a 90s game show.
Yeah, it totally is. You guys are thinking real hard.
Speed round, yeah.
Here's something. I don't know.
Of course.
Oh, that's Billy saying, of course. Oh, the way he said it freaked me out.
Of course.
Ugh. I wish I had a recording of Scott just now going, here's something. That was great. Thank you.
I kept watching this movie and he's saying, is that Scott Johnson walking around? Oh, yeah, no, it's Judge Reinhold.
Right. When I was in high school, I got compared to him all the time. I don't know why. I don't think I look like him at all, but that's what people thought. Right.
I could see it in this movie because this is one of the first times I've seen him since you've talked about that.
Oh,
and when you're looking for it, you kind of see it.
No, weird. All right. Well, of course.
Of course.
All right. Great. How about another bad joke? Here you go.
You got a $50 bill?
I got a wife and three kids. I haven't seen a 50 in 12 years.
I actually kind of laughed at that.
Who has a $50 bill on them? Name the last time any of you had a $50 bill.
I have kids and I got what his joke was on the
last 20s, ages. 20s, no problem. Even $100 bills, but 50s?
You get $100 bills?
You go to Vegas.
You?
Yeah.
Once in a while. Once in a while. I mean, Brian's he's a high roller.
I'm a player.
Yeah.
Hit the player, hit the game.
Yeah.
Fifty's an unusual denomination.
Well, who's the 100? Who's on it?
But you know, Benjamin it makes
Franklin.
Sense.
Is that Franklin? So that's fat stacks of Benjis right there.
Stacks of Benjamins, right? Okay.
But it makes sense to counterfeit 50s because no one has them. So that makes sense. They were pointed at the
$1 bills.
Right, they were pointing at the obscurity of it, that it would be easier to pass $50.
Oh, that's Grant. I forgot Grant was on that money
on the 50.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. All right,
that's our favorite money here in the South. I don't know.
Because you guys like that Grant fella.
Those 50s will rise again.
Yeah. Wait, isn't he the one that beat this? He wasn't fighting South.
I was being sarcastic.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you got the wrong team there.
We have songs.
Well, of course you do. Here's one. What's this? What?
You got a $50 bill?
Oh, it's
you got a $50 bill?
I love you, okie dokie.
There's that kid. He's great. That kid was great.
Oh, and then the actress. What was her? I love her. The grandma. She's been in lots of stuff.
Has she?
Oh, she didn't have any speaking roles.
While I load my camera, that one.
Yeah, I love her in Don't Be a Menace to South Central.
Right.
I don't know her at all. I didn't recognize her
before.
No, love her. Well, I mean, I'm probably not paying enough attention. To me, she was so background in this, I didn't even think about it. But
Randy just mentioned the loading the camera thing. Man, such a transitional period for technology. Cell phones sometimes, beepers sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, payphones other times.
I like how that guy didn't even flinch when he was taking his amateur video of Eddie Murphy firing a gun in the park and everybody else completely freaked, but that guy didn't budge an inch.
How Japanese was he? Because I was trying to figure out if it was racist or not.
I couldn't tell. I was the same way. I saw him and went, I don't know what to think. Who is this? Where are you from? What's your ancestry?
Who are you?
Yeah, who are you? All right, I love this guy right here.
Why am I not surprised?
I just think I understand he's the Taggart of the movie, but he has his own little twist. I like that guy a lot.
I like Hector Elizondo too. Yeah. I think he's
a hoot. This part felt really racist and profile-y to me. So I'm just going to play it for you. It's 8 seconds. And it just felt really racist. Here you go.
So,
attention, this is an all-city alert for a suspect in the Thornton shooting. The suspect is an African-American male in his 30s approximately.
He couldn't even get the word African-American out before those cops went, I've only seen one black person today.
In that instant, every cop in Los Angeles suddenly started chasing the last black guy he saw, apparently.
And there was, are you kidding me, the last black guy? There was hardly any other black people in this movie.
Yeah, I think that's on purpose because the whole idea is he's from Detroit. Detroit, where all the black people are, apparently, and now there's nobody. I mean, that's the dumbest premise because LA is very extremely racially diverse. Aren't white people the minority there pretty much? Or do I have that wrong?
Right, I couldn't figure that part out either. In like when the part where he was talking on the cell phone,
maybe not Beverly Hills,
right? Maybe not in Beverly Hills. When he was talking, Eddie Murphy was talking on the cell phone. I mean, cell phone on the payphone behind all the white guys at the bar.
Yeah.
None of them had even looked over at Eddie Murphy until. They said that, so I guess they were all like peeping at him or something.
And then they all shot to the phone when they saw the news.
They're all thinking in the back of their head, I'm drinking, but there's a black guy behind me. There's a black guy behind me.
I heard there's a black guy on the large.
They're just
it's really weird.
They're just really well. I mean, they were blind to everything. They got our TV here. Oh, you mean this giant black one right here looking at us? Yeah, we have a TV here. In fact,
the only bar in the world that doesn't have a TV.
That's funny because I was just about to play this.
Is there a TV here?
There it is, right there.
Good job.
They just wanted to give him a line. I don't know what they could have done. What else is it? That's Sherman.
Is that, you say something is obvious.
Wait, who was that? Was that one of the director?
Robert Sherman. No, he was the It's a Small World guy.
Music guy. Okay. The long-haired dude was a director guy, right? Badly coiffed.
I think that was Harryhausen. That was Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, really? He's a hairier housing than I expected.
It was a shaggy housing.
Shaggy housing. Hippie housing. Let's see here. Some yelling acting. We haven't had that in a while, so here's a little bit of that. It's Billy and Lady in the freezer or whatever they were in. Here you go.
Get you a phone and call the police. I'll try and find Axel.
That's when they were leaving the room. That was. I thought that was hilarious.
Her thing at the end is the best.
All right.
Because he's just yelling.
Get you a phone and call the police. I'll try and find Axel.
I'm assuming they must have been directed that the foam that would be coming down would be very loud. So it would have to, you know, when they foley that in later, it would have to be very loud.
That sounds about right to me.
Weird.
Yep. Well, that's good stuff. I love that one. All right. Mm-hmm. Here's a great falling death to finish us out here. One of my favorites in a long time. We haven't had a good one of these in a while. So here is a falling death that I really enjoyed. There you go. Kind of a Doppler effect to it.
Totally.
And then there was this one scene.
Windiggy.
And one other one.
That was the one of the mascots, right?
Yeah.
Willie Windiggy.
Yeah.
17 episodes in a row.
They were arguing over how much the ticket price to the park costs, at one point she says, well, I'll make you a deal. And he said,
what kind of a deal?
Yeah, so you don't remember this, but it was right there in the movie. That's it for your clips. And that brings us directly in front of, almost as if a car is hurtling at you, the checklist. Oh, excuse me. Flat tops were alive and well in 94. Check. Got it.
True. Definitely, yeah.
Looking good. Long, soul-crushing scenes with fake character mascot suits. Check. That was in there.
Got it.
And too much Serge. Check.
Too much as in any.
Any, yeah. Too much as any. Yeah. Trek stuff. There's some Trek connections.
One last checklist thing.
What?
Black guy dies first.
Oh, hey. I didn't even think about that. We haven't done that in a while. Yeah. Wow. All right. Back to some old roots there. The Trek stuff includes the following. I just picked out the two interesting ones. Usan Elam played Penderson in DS9, performed stunts in several episodes, stunt doubled for Avery Brooks, and was also in Insurrection. Then this guy's my favorite. Alan Olney, I think is how you say it. Stunt double for Eddie Murphy. He was the guy jumping from thing to thing. In DS9, he stunt doubled for Avery Brooks in the episode Battle Lines.
Mm. Interesting.
It involved a space.
So he's got a pretty good range.
Yeah, he's all right. Does his stuff. He's okay. Soundtrack great. I'd give it a T for terrible. I thought it was awful. I hated it. I like that theme, but that's not enough for me.
It was pretty bad. Yeah. And it got me thinking. I mean, we were talking about how it just sounded like the previous movies, but what if they had just gone and gotten an orchestra and treated it like a normal movie?
Mm-hmm. Would have been better.
Yeah, it could have worked.
I think it could have worked just fine. All right, we're going to sum this thing up in 140 characters or less. That's where you three come up with Twitter posts about this film. Let's start with Randy.
Hold on.
How about me? Can I go?
Beverly Hills Cop 3. Eddie Murphy, ladies and gentlemen. Can we please keep it going for Eddie Murphy? You know you love him. I'm just going to keep smiling and clapping and doing this thing I've done like 7 movies until I run out of...
characters.
Nicely done.
Did you have to put like little brackets around that, say it in the voice of Eddie Murphy? Do you have to? Does that count as characters?
Yeah, you can't.
I don't ever
brackets.
Give myself stage directions, yeah. Brian. Yeah.
You have to use tweetlonger.org or whatever the hell it is. Right. Let's now move swiftly over to Mr. Brian Dunaway.
Yes, Beverly Hills Cop 3, like yelling at your henchman to wax that clown. 20 years later, yep, still stupid.
That's funny, dude. Your intro today was almost Brian Wax That Clown Dunaway.
Wax That Clown is the boutique that I opened up in Rio de Janeiro for the women who paint their faces for carnival.
Nice. Oh, wax that clown. I'm going to do clown waxing. Ooh, hubba, hubba.
I think we all had a wax that clown joke, didn't we? Randy, did you have one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wax that clown. I had this job back in college.
Did I ever tell you about the time?
Just fill in the blanks.
The Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus doing Brazilians?
Yeah. If you've ever wondered.
As we said, waxing that clown.
Ever wondered how they get all that colored hair off?
Oh, man. Colored hair. Moving on. Brian Ibbett, you're last.
Since my original Twitter post was that wax that clown joke, here's the one that I rewrote. No. No, that's okay. I'm glad I got a chance to use that. All right. Beverly Hills Cop 3. Sorry, folks. The spider riot has gone haywire and is throwing children and stuffed animals all over the place. Stupid fox outside should have told you.
I like Stupid that better. Wally's World. That's a throwback to the, I love that.
Nicely done.
Vacation. Yeah.
Yep. Alternate titles just handed to me. Let's see here. What do we got? Ooh. Very suspenseful. Dead security guard puppet. Or, that was my favorite moment, by the way, is when Eddie Murphy's like working the guy's hand going, mm-hmm. They went over there.
Oh, my gosh.
That is such a trope.
I know. I love it, though.
I
laughed.
Shocking.
I laughed. Because you would never, you'd never desecrate the dead in such ways, would you? Anyway.
Just the things he's already seen in this movie at this point, the things he's been through in terms of like blood and guts and gore and death.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's gone crazy. Maybe he's like Breaking Bad levels of crazy.
Totally could be.
And it actually makes sense.
Yeah. It was like Weekend at Bernie's over there in that end of that room. And then, or the other possibility is nobody takes that huge cartoon gun seriously. Those are your two titles. Yes. We have emails. They came to us via the email address, filmsack@gmail.com. We got one from Dave who says, hey guys, I'm catching up on FilmSack, listening to the one about Leprechaun and listening to the discussion on Warwick Davis. I keep saying Warwick.
Warwick is how it's pronounced.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. Well, then I screwed up on purpose. I'm afraid to say this out loud, but here goes. I think Warwick Davis would make a better Tyrion Lannister than Peter Dinklage.
No, boo.
He says better might be a strong word because I really don't see. I really do like the dink, but
the dink.
He says his English accent sucks, and imagining Davis in that role is an interesting thought. Thanks, Dave. The truth is, I kind of agree in one way, and it's not even the same way he's stating. For me, accent aside, he's more like the freak that Tyrion is in the book, because Tyrion, as portrayed in the show, very smooth, very convincing. Chill and convincing.
Right, in the book,
smooth, convincing.
He's kind of like a maniac philosopher.
Yeah, he's got a different kind of energy, and it's not the same. I'm not saying it's bad or anything. I love what Dinklage is doing.
He's all grotesque in the book.
Mm-hmm. He's more like a freak
after he gets
And when they call him the imp and all that, like, it's a lot more, that's a lot more appropriate in the book. And in the show, he's, you know, he's handsome, he's a good looking guy, just came out short, you know. I mean, it's not like he's that freaky. But even his like scar isn't all that scarring in the show. And, you know, I don't know. I see where he's coming from.
I think I do think it's an interesting idea, but I really think Peter Dinklage has the depth he has a depth of character that he can bring that I don't think Warwick Davis is hilarious, funny, and a little bit, I don't know. He makes me laugh, but I just don't see him in that serious a role, because that's a very serious role.
Well, he just hasn't done much like that, so it's hard for us to compare it. But you can see the station agent and go, oh,
well,
man,
I've seen, yeah, Peter Dinklage
is amazing in that.
Yeah, so there's the deal, right? We're talking about who would fit the role better to look at versus one of these two people is one of the greatest actors alive.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point. I got a bunch of emails this week that said, hey, you guys should take note, The Burbs is streaming.
Yes, I watched it.
And then I wrote below that in text here, and I don't know why I wrote, Dunaway is so excited that his penis hurts.
Wow, how did you know? Wow. It's like it was like a divining rod.
I know you love that movie, so
I do.
A divining rod, nice.
Whoa. An unhealthy love for that movie, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've already watched it.
Did we do that movie on the show?
No, we didn't do that movie on this. No.
No. We may want to consider that one at some point. I don't remember how I felt about The Burbs. I think I thought of like pre-Tom Hanks, like pre-Philadelphia Tom Hanks in a different way than I think of him now. And I don't know if I think of it that highly.
There's plenty to laugh about. There's a lot of stuff that was...
Carrie Fisher's in this, right?
Yeah, Carrie Fisher's in this. It was very timely from his time. There's a lot of stuff to sack about it.
Yeah.
I still think it's a great movie.
Maybe we save it. It feels like Halloween to me, that one.
Yeah.
Does it not?
It's a comedy horror.
And since you just saw it, why don't we sit on that one for a while and see how it goes? Okay.
Sit on it for a year.
Yeah.
Sit on it for a year. Netflix really won't pull it.
Yeah,
the thing about FilmSack.
Yeah, Netflix never moves movies in and out. That'll be fine. It'll be right where it is.
We have a list of upcoming films, and then we have a list of films that we're just kind of tracking.
Yeah.
And every now and then we watch a movie that we've been tracking for more than 2 years.
Keeping our eye on it.
That's the way we do.
Give us an example. What's one of our long trackers? Think of any.
Okay, so we had Harlem Nights. I mean, recently, I am pretty sure that I've been copying and pasting that around on the list for at least 2.5 years.
That sounds about right.
I can't believe how many times Cujo has been in the next 3 or 4 movies.
Yeah.
And then we've bumped it.
Cujo keeps getting bumped. I want to say Dragonheart, the big Connery dragon one. That keeps kind of showing up and getting out.
But then then there's some that were just waiting for that magical day. They've never been streaming. Armageddon is the one that comes to mind for me. Like the one of these days.
The one we think we've seen. Yeah, the one we all think we've seen, but we haven't. Because we bring it up all the time. I mean,
speaking of the list, guess what we're watching next week?
I heard it had something to do with green mutated creatures. Tell me more.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, wow. The original.
You mean those heroes on a half shell?
Yeah, they're the ones. Turtle power. No, this is the first of the suit mask wearing ones from the 80s, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
This is Corey Feldman,
this is the
right?
One.
Yeah, we're not doing that new one, that new weird piece of business.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, we're all in on that. I think that's going to be interesting because I have no opinion because I want to say I kind of avoided those or hardly saw them, so I don't really have an opinion. And I know a lot of people think of them as the beloved thing of their childhood.
They are.
But I don't feel that way.
They are, but you know, you
I like
can
the
definitely,
comics.
There's plenty of stuff.
I was a big fan of the original comics, like the old indie black and white stuff. It's awesome.
Right.
Like nothing quite like it. But the as far as the modern incarnations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has gone, I haven't really paid attention. So this will be interesting.
It will. This is going to be very, very interesting. Other things coming up. We're going to watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
No.
We're going to watch the first Michael Keaton Batman.
Yeah. Ooh, by the way, the invasion we're talking about of the Body Snatchers is 78, correct? That's the one?
71.
Yeah.
Yeah, with
the best one.
Yeah, Donald Sutherland.
Dog face. Well, there's a guy with a dog face.
Yeah, oh, there's a guy with a dog face.
He didn't quite get snatched right.
Holy shite, I'm all in.
That's a bad snatch.
That's great.
Oh, bad snatch.
I don't remember that. All I remember of that movie is that Sutherland finds a rat turd in the soup at the beginning of the movie. That's all I remember.
And then he screams at the top of his lungs.
Does he? Wow.
Yeah.
All
and right. then he chases Katniss around for an hour. No, that's not right.
Great. I'm looking forward to all that. That'll be fun.
Yes.
So coming up soon, those are what you can look forward to next week. Teenage Mutant Ninja Oh, don't play that. What are you doing, Scott?
and Scott
and
plays
scene. That's going to do it for us, though. Filmsack.com is our website. Filmsack@gmail.com is where you can send your email addresses. On Twitter, you can find us at Filmsack. Hey, and while you're at it, why don't you leave us a review on iTunes, on Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are distributed? That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. See you next time.
Woot.
Security henchman popcorn break.
Eddie Murphy, ladies and gentlemen.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Ha ha ha.